98.1 KZE. It is MK, and with me in the studio, of course, you already know Jack Grace is here, and Scott Sherrard is here as well. Hi, Scott.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to see you. It's been a while.
It has, and this is a beautiful place you guys have. It's my first time in the studio.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, the unique thing about the KZE Air Studio is we have windows.
It's really nice.
Don't find that in a lot of air studios, and I really do appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah. It makes the difference.
So you've been busy. You've been playing with Little Feet, doing all kinds of stuff. What have you been up to?
Yeah, I've been with Little Feet since 2019, and we've made, we made two records. We've toured all over the U.S. and a little bit overseas. The first one was called Sam's Place. That was like this blues album where we went to Memphis and recorded in Sam Phillips' recording studio. And that one actually featured Sam Clayton, the percussionist from Little Feet, on vocals.
Awesome.
Because he's been a great blues singer his whole life, and it was the first time he's ever been featured vocally on a whole album, so that was cool.
That's so awesome, yeah.
And that got nominated for a Grammy, so that one did really well. And then last year we released Strike Up the Band, which is sort of our first full-fledged Little Feet album, so, you know, per se.
Yeah.
Being one of the new guys, it's very hard to speak those words out of my mouth, but it is 13 new original songs from the band, and we've just been having a ball. Now we're starting our farewell tour. I think it's going to be a long farewell.
I was going to say, is it going to be like the Dead and Company quote unquote farewell tour, or
I would say that it's in that mold.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a very interesting time because it's kind of like, if you can remember when all the sort of like jazz lions were coming off the stage and the young lions were coming on the stage with jazz,
yeah,
that's kind of like what's happening with rock and roll right now. There's kind of this transition where you have John Mayer basically playing in Dead and Company and Tedeschi Trucks Band honoring that music in their own way. So this band is finding its own way to have a graceful exit. But I can tell you, these guys are just, their energy is just off the scale still. I can't believe how well they play every night. And Little Feet music is not easy.
No, so certainly not.
You would know if it wasn't going well.
Yeah. What has that been like, hanging out with those guys? Did you know them before you joined the band, or how did it come about that you started playing with them?
Well, it's kind of a long story, but I guess it starts with when I was in Greg Allman's band. I was the music director of the band and the guitarist, so I would have to coordinate when people sat in. And we did a tour one summer with the Doobie Brothers, and Bill Payne was with the Doobie Brothers. So I met them there, and then I was sitting in with the Doobies all summer, and Bill and I got to know each other. And then basically what happened is Paul Barrera was very ill with cancer, and he had to sub out a tour. And Larry Campbell and Teresa Williams, our friends from up here, were already booked to open for them.
Mm-hmm.
And they were playing in Paul's place until he came back, and they just couldn't make the last two gigs. So I came to fill in those two shows at the end of a leg,
mm-hmm,
for Larry and Teresa filling in for Paul. And that first day, Paul died that afternoon, right before I met the rest of the band.
Yeah.
And then we went on and played those two shows, and they were like, you're in the band now. So it was a real trial by fire.
When it works, it works. You know,
yeah.
when the shoe fits. You know, and this is such a good example of something that my husband, who's also a career musician, has said, and that I've repeated to people who have kind of like asked me as though I would know, like, how do you succeed at a music career? And I'm like, and what he said that I've repeated to people is like, just be easy to work with. Just be nice. Just be chill. Just make friends. And like, and that's really what it is, right? It's like just this magical community network. And, you know, somebody needs a guitarist and they're like, hey, Scott's great. Call him. And there you are.
100%. I mean, you said the magic word, which is community, you know.
Mm-hmm.
My analogy for that, I call it Jerry Wexler's yacht.
Yeah.
You know, because that's where like you'd have, like there was one yacht trip where like Otis Redding, Aretha Franklin, Duane Allman, Eric Clapton, and Delaney and Bonnie all met each other.
Yeah. And you Lisa know, Wexler was there in the background.
Wexler brought them all together. He's like, these guys, and King Curtis was there too. He's like, these cats will dig each other.
Yeah.
And then it's, you know, the amount of music that came out of that one yacht ride is like insane.
Yeah, legendary. We got Scott Sherrard in the studio. You can see him on Saturday, March 14th at the Local in Saugerties. And this is The Endless Road Live. Tell us a little bit about what that show's going to be.
Well, this show kind of came out of, there's a place up in Galway, New York called the Cock and Bull that I play a few times a year. And every time I play there, I've got this amazing audience that always fills this old, like, late 1800s barn. And I've used it as an incubator to try things. And I tried several months ago this solo show where I did as much storytelling as I did playing. play about 10, 12, 14 songs, depending on how frisky I'm feeling on the mic with stories. And then I tell all these stories from, you know, I mean, I go all the way back to when I was a kid, when I was playing in bars in Milwaukee, and I was playing with guys like Hubert Sumlin and Pine Top Perkins. They were the local cats, mm-hmm. Luther Allison, and then there were all these other guys you've never heard of who I learned the blues from. And then I came to New York City in 96 and went through a lot of different trials and tribulations, but meeting Jay Collins from the Levon Helm Band, he first brought me into that family, and then he brought me into the Greg Allman family. And then that became the last decade of Greg's life and writing songs with him and becoming his band leader. And then, of course, the trip to also joining Little Feat. So the irony of all this is when I was a kid, like the first summer where I decided I wanted to be in a band and I knew what I wanted to do was when I saw Little Feat and the Allman Brothers.
Oh my gosh.
So this show, they were my Beatles and Rolling Stones in my household. So this show is really me sort of like not only telling my own story, but kind of taking you into the tour buses and the studios and, you know, the hotels and all the places where all the creativity and synergy happened. And me, as you know, I was born in 1976. So for me, the first time I was seeing these guys, Craig Fuller was singing Lowell's parts with Little Feat and Warren Haynes was doing the Duane Allman stuff with the Allman Brothers.
Yeah.
So that's when I was 13, 14, that was how I was drafted into the Obsessions.
Yeah.
So for me, those characters gave me license to add whatever I can to it. You know, it was like, at least I didn't have to wrestle with the specter of Lowell George and Duane Allman every day. There was a leap generation that actually did something with it.
Yeah.
And I think that brings it into the community word you've been using, which I love. And I've been, as I age, I've been trying to lean into this more as, you know, we've seen a real sort of fragmentation and erosion of like what our American culture is. And our music is the language of our soul. It's the best message that we can send how we really feel inside. Yeah. So the show is also a little bit about that, as well as just about American music history and what rock and roll is and the beautiful fusion that it is. Yeah. I mean, the Allman Brothers and Little Feat were both integrated bands. They were both, you know, one was from the South, you know, Little Feat was from LA, but Little Feat also had Kenny Gradney and Sam Clayton, whose families were deep roots in Louisiana. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's the whole show is kind of about that in my own experience of it through my own lens. And I was really influenced by people when I was a kid growing up. I actually got to see Spalding Gray a couple times, and I was a huge fan of Anthony Bourdain. So I've tried to develop somewhat of a narrative voice in all this.
Yeah. Did you have to kind of like write out a script for yourself at all? Or have you just sort of developed it over, you know, the years and the experience of doing the shows?
That's a great question, especially as like, I think the local will be like the sixth or seventh time I've done this. So it's still pretty fresh. But yeah, I mean, I have notes on stage, but I've also, the other thing that inspired me to even start this was my Substack page, which is Scott Sherrard's Endless Road on Substack. And I was writing these essays about these grander American music history themes and sometimes tying it into my own experiences. And I was getting a lot of great feedback, not only from fans and friends, but also from music writers saying this should be a live show.
Yeah.
And I started listening. And actually, one of the people who encouraged me to do this was a gentleman who was one of the creators and showrunners of VH1 Storytellers.
Mm.
And he actually came to the first show and he was like, this is great. You're on the right path. Just keep doing this show that I just saw. So I've been having some help to try to figure it out. But, you know, honestly, the reason this all happened in the end is I had a few months off. I booked this Cock and Bull gig. I booked one gig at City Winery. And then people started showing up in my DMs and my email box, offering me gigs, asking me to play at this place. I'll help you get a gig at this place. I really want to see the show. And then boom, I had a little mini tour.
It popped up organically.
Yeah, no agents, no managers, no publicists. Just
that's
completely
kinda nice.
Grassroots.
Yeah.
Me and my Honda Fit and a guitar. And
you're a Honda Fit guy too.
By attrition, yes. I live in Harlem in New York City. So it's like, what, you know, I'm not going to park, you know,
right,
a vintage Mustang on the street.
There's nothing better than
not
driving
that I could
my Fit
afford one
the
anymore.
No, of course.
Not that I could afford a Honda Fit anymore.
No, I'm lucky I got mine when
what
I did.
What happened to these cars?
I can't imagine. But no, that's amazing. And it's like half show, half TED Talk kind of is what it sounds like. And we were also talking off mic about how you were a bit of a podcast early adopter. Have you ever thought about turning this into a podcast?
Yeah, I've danced around the edges of the podcast. I've got to do it at some point, and I definitely would need like a technical partner on it the way I would want to do it, because mm-hmm. I see it as kind of like a program that would involve music as well. I don't know. Did you check out Dave Chappelle's podcast when mm-hmm. he had it?
No.
Oh my gosh, that show was so incredible. It had such a beautiful mix of music montages and dialogues and conversations. It came out like a long time ago, but
yeah.
It's called The Midnight Miracle. Okay. He doesn't do it anymore, but yeah. I would do something along those lines. Something
really well produced.
Yeah, I wouldn't do something. I do, you know, there'd be soundscapes. It'd be more conceptual than just sitting down and doing an interview, because I don't really think I'm good at interviewing, actually.
No? You know, I mean, you're a very natural person to talk to.
Yeah, I could probably get into it, but I think the thing with the conversation is to have it be something that really paints a broader picture of why we do all of this.
Yeah.
You know, because really, I do believe that we're in sort of a full-scale existential crisis right now.
100%.
Perhaps even as a species, but mm-hmm. definitely as Americans, where it's like, what is music's role in that? Because it's no longer about having hit song. It's no longer about reaching, you know, doing the We Are the World single. I mean, how has no one done that with everything that's going on? It's because the information is so fractured. And I've been trying to find a way to help in whatever corner of the world I live in to usher rock and roll into this kind of, I don't know, this
like
period.
A unifying role.
Well, it's becoming like a... It's going through its natural process, which is classical music, when it transitioned from being, you know, the thing. Like if you go from the Firebird Suite or Philip Glass, or these are the last provocative dying acts of mm-hmm. it being a pop art, to jazz, and then that last dying acts in the 80s and 90s. And rock is now in that kind of ushering, you know, this guitar-based music with a rhythm section playing this certain way. It's always going to be here. It's so important. Everyone has to study it. Everyone has to know it to be able to play.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, I'm very curious to see what kids will come up with. But in the meantime, I mean, I'm kind of like Yo-Yo Ma with a cello on my best day. You know,
that's like pretty good.
I play, well, that's one of my heroes, you know. It's like, and I don't mean that in terms of like how good it is. I mean, just in terms of the conceit, you know.
Yeah.
It's kind of like being a cellist with a 400-year-old instrument.
Sure, but also, you know, Yo-Yo Ma has done some really interesting experimental stuff in the last few years, and some really exciting, like, you know, I love the Goat Rodeo stuff he was doing with Edgar Meyer and Chris Thiele, and there was, I think, one other person. So, you know, there's always ways to take, you know, something traditional and make it modern.
Exactly, yeah. It's just, it's never going to be, you know, the Rolling Stones again.
Sure, sure.
That's the difference, right? It's like, or Warner Brothers Records in the 70s. I mean, the stories I've heard about Little Feat being signed to Warner Brothers in the 70s and being on the movie studio lot with a fully stocked recording studio and their hallmates on the recording studio or in the rehearsal studio lot were Bonnie Raitt, Jackson Browne, the Eagles. You know, they were all Linda Ronstadt. They were all in one hallway.
Just unbelievable.
And they would go into each other's rooms all day for like a year. When they were all developing, and to be low in the corner, like teaching Bonnie how to play slide, and Jackson Browne sitting Indian style under low while he was like writing Spanish Moon. Like these guys tell me all these stories.
And it's like, I don't think stuff like that happens anymore.
Well, there's your community thing again. Yeah. But that was thanks to Mo Austin.
Right.
And all the money he could make off of the situation. Yeah. Now all that money's in tech. You know, it's not so much. And in the arts, it's probably in streaming TV, mm-hmm. you know? That seems to be the most creative space for commercial art now.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't necessarily want to go down an AI rabbit hole, but like there's that kind of looming specter. And if you don't mind going down briefly the rabbit hole, do you have any thoughts on the specter of AI? And just what are you thinking about it?
Well, ultimately, I mean, with technology, I mean, with AI, it's kind of a whole nother level, right? Because we could talk about Jimi Hendrix with a guitar pedal and electric guitar, right? Mm-hmm. And obviously that was monumentally important for my life. But when that happened at the time, I think it was somewhat disparaged by most, you know, acoustic-based musicians, right? So AI is a tool. And the question is, in the music community, I can't address all the, you know, all the apocalyptic talk that's going on with, you know, our AI overlords and Terminator coming to life.
Mm-hmm.
I read a lot of scary stuff, but in terms of music, I see it honestly eliminating a lot of jobs. Now, do I think those jobs are people who are going to make the next Sergeant Peppers? No. I think a lot of them are sadly people who are doing kind of artistically disposable work, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, what it will do is it will kind of cull the herd creatively. And I think people like Yo-Yo Ma, who can really play, or, you know, whoever else you want, Derek Trucks or whoever it is, people who can really play, they're going to have to go on the road. You're going to have to get in a room with them, and it's going to be a dramatic and amazing boutique experience.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if there's no going back with any of this, and that's a good thing. And with AI, I hope younger musicians learn how to use it to make their writing better, their performing better. Maybe they can use it to critique themselves further. Because like YouTube was with millennials, and I do a lot of teaching on and off, and it's one of my passions. I've noticed with millennials in particular, the way they utilized YouTube is kind of on the AI spectrum in terms of what we had to do to learn Eric Clapton's solo on Crossroads. Was like I had to like break 5 CDs.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't look at his hands. So I was playing some things in the wrong positions.
Yeah.
Until I got older, I realized same notes, wrong position. But these kids, you know, they could go on and watch this video. Who knows what AI will do for people their, you know, artistic, like for their musical capacity. And maybe it'll become more about volume. You know, maybe it'll become more about, you know, you hear all these stories about Prince, like recording and writing a song every day. Maybe everybody will be doing things like that because AI will be assisting them to follow this, but the message, like what people sing and what they say, it always comes down to the groove and the voice. I just really feel like this is caveman stuff, and I don't think there's any way of ever escaping it. Every band is only as good as its drummer, its singer, and its songs, and those are like ancient qualities that are mandatory for society. So if people use AI for all the other accoutrement, that's fine. To me, the guitar, it's like, the guitar is like a tool.
Mm-hmm.
AI is a tool, but a beat and a voice, that is humanity, right? So it's like, however you dress that up, and the message,
yeah,
and the melody of it, you know. But that all comes back to that. Mm-hmm. I always tell everyone, it's like, if you don't have a groove, you don't have a good singer, and you don't have a great song, what are you doing? You know, you got to really have that locked in. And I think they'll use AI to figure out how to make the rest of it, you know, easy.
All right. Yep. That's a good take. Scott Sherrard is my guest. You can catch him on Saturday, March 14th at The Local in Saugerties. Tickets are available now at thelocalsaugerties.com. And also Saturday night at the Falcon, but that one sold out.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, there's standing room left, but who wants to deal with that? At least, you know, I'm 49. I'm somebody done with standing might. Up. You
yeah.
Know?
I mean, I definitely agree. I'm past the days of like, you know, getting to the pit at the, you know, 3 hours early so I can stand at the front of the stage. I will take a seat up in the VIP and I will be happy.
Yeah, I used to do that all the time. Now it's like I get apoplectic when I think about that. I can't do it.
No, no, no. My back won't let me do
That's
it.
That's what I mean.
I can't stand that long.
There's so many concerns.
That's The Local in Saugerties, thelocalsaugerties.com. And we have been playing Midnight Flight off the new Little Feat record. Anything, any cool behind-the-scenes factoids you can tell us about Midnight Flight?
Yeah, I mean, this one from the Little Feat album is one of the songs I wrote on my own. And I have a few on the record that I wrote. And I had a really rich, inspired period where I played those first two shows and I wrote this song right away. After that, I think you'll see why. It's kind of the groove is definitely like a signature Little Feat groove, which was something I grew up with. Definitely kind of New Orleans funk influenced. You know, it's just, I can't tell you. It's like every time I even hear someone say that, it's like I have to pinch myself, you know, writing a song and having Little Feat play it. But when I brought it to them, I said, we'll see how it goes. And I think everyone liked the song. But as soon as they started playing, and you'll hear it on the record, there's a way they play grooves that only they play. And it was like, wow, they immediately made it theirs, you know. So it was a real honor to do it.
It's Midnight Flight from Little Feat. Scott Sherrard on 98.1 KZE.